Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is the Owner-Operator Drivers Association against Mayflower Transit. Mr. Cohen.
May it please the Court, my name is David Cohen and I represent the appellants in this case. Motor carriers like Mayflower are required by statute to maintain public liability property damage, sometimes called PLP.
Cohen, before we get into the merits, I have a question about appellate jurisdiction. I understand that Mayflower had counterclaims that it dismissed without prejudice, but reserving the right to refile them after this appeal is over. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I believe that Mayflower agreed to dismiss their claims with prejudice, and that was in the order that was entered on February 22nd.
I'll be asking them, because I read what they wanted was a dismissal without prejudice. And if it's without prejudice, I think we've got very serious problems of appellate jurisdiction.
As I recall, Your Honor, initially the counterclaims were not addressed by the district court. And then when the court ordered briefing on the issue, at that time the court entered a final judgment and Mayflower's counterclaims were dismissed with prejudice, I believe, Your Honor.
Yeah, of course, it's very hard for us to know what the final judgment is because your brief violates Circuit Rule 30. It does not include a copy of the final judgment. That's the A number one thing we need from every appellant, is the judgment. You certified that your appendix complied with Rule 30, but your certificate is false.
I apologize for that, Your Honor.
I don't know how it's even possible to omit the judgment and certify that you've included it. It's not as if it's a complex document.
This appeal raises two critical issues regarding public liability property damage insurance. The first issue is whether a motor carrier can pass through the cost of this insurance under any circumstances. I'll address that issue second. The other issue is whether Mayflower can charge back the cost of such insurance to its owner-operators under the circumstances in this case. In this case, the record demonstrates that Mayflower required its owner-operators and those owner-operators leased to its agents to purchase PLPD insurance from Mayflower as a condition of signing the lease. In other words, owner-operators were required to purchase PLPD insurance from Mayflower if they wanted to work for Mayflower. The district court erred in holding that Mayflower could require owner-operators to purchase PLPD insurance from Mayflower because, in the district court's opinion, the chargeback of PLPD insurance was, quote, a permissible chargeback. The district court erred by confusing and conflating two distinct and independent provisions.
How many circuits have considered this issue so far?
None have considered the issue of whether or not the chargeback of PLPD insurance violates the forced purchase rule, Your Honor. No circuits have considered that issue. The Eighth Circuit considered whether or not it could be passed through under any circumstances. The district court...
Do you say only the Eighth Circuit?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
The district court erred at confusing and conflating two distinct and independent provisions of the leasing regulations. The first regulation...
What is it the 11th Circuit did that you say is irrelevant?
Right. What case are you referring to, Your Honor?
The one at 541 Fed Third, Landstar.
Oh, Landstar. Well, Landstar did not involve...
One of the problems here is it looks to me like the Owner-Operators Association is pursuing a policy of trying to litigate this in as many circuits as possible, one suit in each circuit against a different licensee, a different certificate holder, in the hope of maybe generating a conflict. There's certainly outcomes in 11 and 8, and it looks like there are cases like this pending elsewhere.
Well, that's not correct, Your Honor. The Landstar case did not involve chargebacks of PLPD insurance. And there's no other cases that I'm aware of, and I represent OIDA in many cases, where this issue was pending. The only cases where this issue was presented to the courts was in the United Van Lines case, which went to the Eighth Circuit, and in the Mayflower case, which is now before this court.
Okay.
The what in the record shows that there were chargebacks?
Well, Your Honor,
of the PLPD insurance.
The plaintiffs submitted before the district court three lease agreements that on their face required the owner-operators to purchase PLPD insurance. These are contained in our appendix at pages 90.
I recall seeing the leases, but what evidence in the record is there that there were chargebacks of this insurance?
The schedule, looking first at the NIDIG lease, Schedule B, which is on appendix page 108, states that NIDIG was to be charged 2.5% of the line haul. The contract truckman lease, Schedule B, appendix page 139, the charge was $305 per month. The chargeback provision is found at 376.12i. It is clear and unambiguous. The provision prohibits motor carriers from forcing, the provision prohibits motor carriers from requiring owner-operators to purchase any products, services, or equipment from the motor carrier as a condition of signing the lease. And the regulation applies to any product, services, or equipment. There's no exemption. There's no exceptions under the plain language of the leasing regulation. And the regulatory history confirms that. The ICC stated that this regulation should be, quote, all-inclusive. And it specifically identified insurance as falling within the scope of the regulation. In this case, the plaintiffs put before the district court three lease agreements that on their face required the owner-operators to purchase PLPD insurance from Mayflower as a condition of working for Mayflower. The district court held, the district court's analysis is summed up in one sentence, which is that the owner-operators were not required to purchase PLPD insurance from Mayflower. Rather, they were subject to, quote, clearly permissible chargebacks for insurance that Mayflower was statutorily required to maintain. This was an error of law.
Can I just back you up for a minute and ask you this question? Is there any evidence aside from the unverified lease which you just talked about showing the amount that Mayflower's agents actually required owner-operators to buy their insurance?
Other than what's in the lease agreement?
Right.
Yes, there is. I'd have to... Not in the record before the court, because this was the I claim. The I claim is based on the plain language of the regulation says that the lease cannot require the owner-operator to purchase products, equipment, or services. And that's what was presented before the district court, that the lease agreement required.
So that was it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The chargeback, I'm sorry, just because a chargeback is deemed permissible does not exempt it from the forced purchase regulation. There's nothing in the leasing regulations that support that proposition. Essentially, the district court gave a free pass to Mayflower on the forced purchase regulation, and it essentially read I out of the regulations, which is a very disturbing ruling. It is the only decision by any court in the country where I has been held, where anything has been held to be exempt from I. And the two district court decisions that have taken up this issue, the CR England decision and the LEADAR decision, both applied I to insurance. Going to the second issue is whether Mayflower can charge back its PLPD costs under any circumstances. 376.12J1 states that the lease shall clearly specify the legal obligation of the authorized carrier to maintain insurance coverage for the protection of the public. The question here is, what does the word maintain mean? Black's Law Dictionary, 5th and 6th editions, 1979 and 1990, define maintain to include both continue in place and bear the expense of. Both the district court and the Eighth Circuit only gave the continue in place definition to maintain. Now, why was this error? It was error because the restrictive definition of maintain frustrates the regulatory and statutory goals that Congress set in place. Specifically, in the Motor Carrier Act of 1980, where Congress increased the level of insurance that was necessary to protect the public, the legislative history states that there were two goals. The first was to create incentives to motor carriers to maintain and operate their trucks in a safe manner. And the second was to assure that carriers maintain an appropriate level of financial responsibility. The House report specifically stated that the safety incentives were based on the fact that insurance companies based their premiums on the safety record of motor carriers. If the motor carrier operated its trucks in an unsafe manner, premiums would increase, and Congress intended those increased premiums to constitute an incentive to the motor carrier, not to the owner-operator. Now, under the district court's ruling and under the Eighth Circuit's ruling, there is no incentive, or at least this incentive is not operable, because if premiums do increase, that Mayflower simply passes those increased premiums to the owner-operator. So this court should include within the definition of maintain, bear the cost of, because to do otherwise would frustrate the purpose of the regulations and the statutory. The
price that Mayflower pays to the owner-operators regulated?
The price itself? No.
Then I don't understand your position. What's the difference between paying the owner-operator, say, $1.10 a mile and deducting 10 cents for insurance, and paying the owner-operator $1 a mile and not deducting anything for insurance?
Well, the purpose of the regulations is...
I'm not asking about the purpose of the regulation. I'm asking about the underlying economics. If the price isn't regulated... Now, this is a fundamental theorem in economics, that if the underlying price for a product isn't regulated, how subsidiary issues are dealt with is utterly irrelevant. Mayflower will set the net price, and if it's high enough in competition, it will get the owner-operators it wants, and if it's not high enough, it'll have to raise it. But the difference between $1.10, subtract 10 cents, and $1, subtract nothing, is, well, there isn't any difference, right? So what's really at stake here?
Well, what's at stake here, Your Honor, is the purpose and the language of the regulations themselves. The regulations are really the last vestige of a part of an industry that was once highly regulated. Now, under deregulation, most of those regulations went away. But the truth in leasing regulations were put in place.
But as long as the price isn't regulated, it seems to me that this underlying question about how... This is essentially a question about accounting. It's not about substance. That's why I'm trying to figure out whether anything turns on the answer.
Well, I disagree that this is merely about accounting. The public liability, PLPD insurance under the regulations is required to be maintained by the motor carrier.
Yes.
And the incentives that Congress intended to place on motor carriers by maintaining the public liability property damage insurance is frustrated
Maybe you're just not grasping the point of the question. But there are no changes in incentives if the underlying price for the independent contractor's service changes at the same time as any change in the price of insurance. And I don't see why that can't happen. Anyway, go ahead with your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Also, the court should reject the argument that Mayflower makes in its brief that the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Brady Miller is dispositive That case did not involve the pass-through of insurance. The only issue before the court was whether owner-operators could require motor carriers could require owner-operators to indemnify the motor carrier. Now, in fact, if an owner-operator...
That, at least, is a case I'm familiar with. You may not be aware of it, but I wrote the ICC's brief in Transamerican Freight Lines.
I was not aware of that, Your Honor.
It's an old friend.
Well, then...
Back when there was an ICC, of course.
But the key point here is that the owner-operators, by agreeing to indemnify, would be free to go out and find the most affordable insurance, which they cannot do here because of the forced purchase. I see I'm running into my rebuttal time, and I will stop down. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Morris.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mike Morris, and I represent the appellee in this case, Mayflower Transit. Before I talk about the substantive legal issues before the court, I would like to briefly address a fundamental deficiency that undercuts the plaintiff's entire case. And it's an issue that I think was
actually,
raised.
Actually, before you talk about any fundamental deficiencies, I want to talk about appellate jurisdiction. Right. Have the counterclaims been dismissed with or without prejudice?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that they were dismissed without prejudice.
All right. Well, so we've got a problem. We not only have a problem because the litigants can't agree on what the judgment is, but we've got a problem with appellate jurisdiction. We have a case called Horowitz against Alloy Automotive that says that if one party dismisses some claims without prejudice, planning to reinstate them after the appeal, then the judgment is not final and an appeal is not possible.
Well, Your Honor, my understanding, and obviously I'm not familiar with the case, and I apologize for that, but my belief is that appellate jurisdiction exists because there are no pending claims before the district court. Those counterclaims were dismissed.
The basic rule of finality is the case has to be final before an appeal can be taken. Claims dismissed without prejudice are not final because they can be revived. Horowitz is a case that dealt with this kind of gimmick where one party says, oh, let's see if we can get an interlocutory decision on some of the issues in the case, and then we'll reinstate the rest of them. And Horowitz says, no, that gimmick doesn't work. This seems to be the same gimmick, unless the claims have been dismissed, as Mr. Cohen said, with prejudice.
Well, all I can tell you, Your Honor, is that I do not believe that I believe the cases were, I mean, the counterclaims were dismissed without prejudice, but I believe that the jurisdiction remains in place in this court because there are no claims pending.
As I say, we've been through this. That's Horowitz. I think it's obvious from this discussion that we need supplemental memos from the parties. I will give the parties 10 days to file memos addressing the question of appellate jurisdiction. Of course, one way to produce appellate jurisdiction would be for Mayflower to dismiss the counterclaims with prejudice.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right?
Yes, you are 100% correct about that.
You will want to take a look at Horowitz against Alloy Automotive.
I promise you I will be fully familiar with it by the end of the day.
Okay. Now let's proceed.
Sure, Your Honor. The issue I wanted to discuss was, I believe, an issue that was raised by the questions that Judges Williams and Tinder posed to Mr. Cohen. And that is that, without a question, the posture of this case is somewhat unusual. The plaintiffs have elected to limit their appeal to the district court's denial of their own summary judgment motion that was filed in 2003 and requested a class-wide judgment of liability that carriers cannot charge through PLPD cost to owner-operators. They do not and consciously elected not to appeal the district court's later ruling in 2008 granting summary judgment to Mayflower on all of plaintiffs' claims applicable to all plaintiffs. So the consequence of that choice that the plaintiffs made is this. The court must look only at the plaintiff's motion as it was filed in the district court in 2003 and look only at the evidence that was submitted along with that motion. And if the district court correctly denied that motion for any reason, then all other issues in the case are moot, and they cannot prevail. And the simple truth, Your Honors, is that the plaintiffs failed in the district court, and they fail again in this court, to establish even the most basic predicate facts necessary to even seek summary judgment. That is, they must have a specific named plaintiff in this case with a signed lease with Mayflower or a Mayflower agent that transported shipments under that lease. That owner-operator must have been forced to purchase insurance from Mayflower or an agent, and that plaintiff must have paid money, must have paid PLPD insurance charges to Mayflower or a Mayflower agent. None of those basic facts were established either in the district court or here. Mr. Cohen has said that the only evidence he has of chargebacks is three leases that are in the court's appellate appendix. But those leases do nothing more than establish the potential for a chargeback. And even the leases themselves are inconsistent about whether or not there is going to be a chargeback or may be such a chargeback. But in any event, what is absolutely clear is this. There is no evidence of any sort that any plaintiff before this court was ever forced or required to purchase PLPD insurance from Mayflower, and there is not a whit of evidence that any plaintiff, in fact, paid $1 to Mayflower or a Mayflower agent for PLPD. As this court has stressed, advisory opinions are impermissible. Courts are in the business of resolving concrete legal disputes involving specific party litigants. And here the plaintiffs are really asking for a judicial declaration on an abstract proposition, which is if Mayflower had charged through PLPD costs or their agents had, would that hypothetical practice violate the leasing regulations? Respectfully, Your Honors, we don't believe that they had any right to summary judgment and that, therefore, the judgment below should be affirmed. I'd like now to address...
Before you move on, though...
Yes, Your Honor.
In whatever complaint this is, whatever version of the complaint, I can't recall, they did seek a declaratory judgment, didn't they?
They sought a declaratory judgment. But even in that instance, Your Honor, they would need to establish the basic fact that some owner-operator was actually charged this PLPD charge. And there is not. We have scoured the record. There is no such evidence.
I'm puzzled by what evidence you think an actual charge would be. Since Mayflower is the payor under these leases, Mayflower presumably deducts the insurance cost from the amount it pays to the owner-operator. It doesn't ask the owner-operator to write it a check. It's engaged in an offset.
But in that situation, Your Honor, there would be a settlement statement that is provided to the owner-operator that would reflect such a charge. No such settlement statements were provided. There is no evidence that any of these plaintiffs ever paid $1 in PLPD charges. Let me talk a little bit about the PLPD claim substantively, because we believe that a motor carrier's practice of passing through the cost of PLPD insurance to owner-operators is entirely permissible. Every court and five federal judges who have addressed this issue have reached that very conclusion. The relevant statutes and regulations tell us that a motor carrier is required to maintain PLPD insurance for the protection of the public. But neither those statutes nor the regulations provide or address who must pay for, as opposed to who must maintain or obtain such insurance. And the leasing regulations specifically permit chargebacks for PLPD insurance. The regulation that we're talking about here is 49 CFR section 376.12J1. The meaning and the wording of that regulation is clear and unambiguous. The first sentence provides that the lease must state that the carrier is required to maintain, not pay for, but maintain PLPD insurance. The second sentence provides that with respect to any other insurance, the owner-operator and the carrier can negotiate among themselves as to who will provide, again, not pay for, but provide, those other forms of insurance. And then finally, the last sentence of the regulation tells us that if the carrier is going to make a chargeback for any of this insurance, whether it's the first PLPD sentence or the second other forms of insurance sentence, the carrier can do so, so long as it discloses the amount of the chargeback in the lease. And here I must note, the plaintiffs in this appeal do not challenge the adequacy of the disclosure of the PLPD chargeback. They say any chargeback, no matter how disclosed, is unlawful. As I mentioned, three courts and five judges have looked at this very issue. The district court below, of course, then the district court in the OIDA versus United Bandlines case, and then the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, which affirmed the district court's judgment dismissing the PLPD claim in OIDA versus United. And all of those judges reached the same conclusion that I just espoused. That is, that the leasing regulations read clearly, provide that motor carriers may charge back to owner-operators for the cost of PLPD insurance, and that there is nothing in federal statute or regulations that says otherwise, so long as the amount of the chargeback is disclosed in the lease, as it was here. We believe those rulings are correct and should be followed here. Now, the plaintiffs try to avoid this conclusion by suddenly claiming that the chargeback for PLPD insurance is actually a forced purchase of insurance, prohibited by the immediately preceding regulation, Section 376.12i. First, I must note that that forced purchase claim was nowhere pleaded in the complaint. There is not a single mention of forced purchase anywhere in the complaint. I don't understand how the district court, or this court for that matter, could order a judgment on something that is completely unpleaded. Secondly, as I've mentioned before, under the sole pertinent lease that's before this court, which is plaintiff John Neidig's lease with Mayflower agent Gazda, that lease expressly says that the owner-operator is not required to purchase any form of insurance from or through Mayflower. And the plaintiffs in this case have introduced no evidence that Mr. Neidig was, in fact, required to buy that insurance. Also, the plaintiff's legal argument is illogical. If every PLPD chargeback is an illegal forced purchase of insurance, then why does the very next subsection in the regulations say that carriers can charge back PLPD charges so long as they're adequately disclosed? One of a well-settled statutory canon of construction that one part of the leasing regulations should not be read to rescind or contradict the very preceding section. Also, the leasing regulations actually draw a distinction between chargebacks and purchases. And importantly, the insurance regulation that we've been discussing here this morning, subsection J, characterizes insurance charges as chargebacks, not as purchases. In fact, an earlier regulation, 376.12H, is entitled chargeback items, and that regulation defines a chargeback as being all items that may initially be paid for by the carrier but ultimately deducted from the owner-operator's compensation. And here, the plaintiff's own pleaded facts establish that this is exactly such a chargeback because the plaintiffs themselves say that Mayflower purchased PLPD insurance for itself to satisfy its legal obligation to maintain such insurance, and they admit that Mayflower simply passed through some portion of the PLPD cost to owner-operators. In other words, Your Honors, they admit that owner-operators never purchased insurance from Mayflower at all. Rather, what they did was reimburse Mayflower or its agents for costs, insurance costs, that those entities had incurred in covering their owner-operators. And again, remember, there is no evidence that any plaintiff in this case was required or forced to purchase anything. So for all those reasons, Your Honor, we think that the leasing regulations clearly provide that it's permissible for motor carriers to charge back for the cost of PLPD insurance, and we think that the Eighth Circuit's ruling and the District Court's ruling in OIDA versus United are correct and should be followed.
Thank you, Mr. Morris.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, Mr. Cohen?
Just a few points. In terms of the record of actual chargebacks, as Judge Easterbrook pointed out, if you look at, for example, The third lease between OOIDA member Richard Wheatley and Mayflower agent Whittier Transfer and Storage, appendix page 117, it states that PLPD insurance deduction taken by Mayflower will be charged directly to the independent contractor.
That lease didn't come into the case till after the summary judgment was briefed, did it?
No, that was before the district court, Your Honor. That was
It was part of your summary judgment submission in favor of summary judgment?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's part of the exhibits to the reply brief, document 354. And
it was an exhibit with your reply brief.
Yeah, I can give you the exhibit number.
That's fine. I can find it.
And also, the NIDIG lease states, and this is on appendix page 108, that Mayflower will deduct 2.5% of line haul. Well, that, as Judge Easterbrook said, that comes off the top. There's no reason why that would show up in any kind of statement or paperwork. And the language of the regulation doesn't talk about settlement statements. It says that you cannot force an owner-operator to purchase any products, services, or equipment as a condition of entering into the lease agreement. In terms of the economic argument or the economic issues that Judge Easterbrook raised, I would just say that this is really a matter for Congress or the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration and their judgment as to how this industry is to be regulated. Going to whether or not the forced purchase claim was pleaded in the complaint, and if you look at paragraph 35A of the amended complaint, this is in the defendant's appendix, pages 221, 222. This was not cited in our reply brief. Paragraph 35A specifically alleges that Mayflower improperly charged owner-operators for PLPD insurance, and those improper charges included both the pass-through and the forced purchase. In terms of the argument that Mr. Morris made that this really isn't a purchase, I think that's belied by the fact that the lease agreements state that money is changing hand, that they're being charged for something. They're paying for something out of their compensation. You can't hide behind the fact that Mayflower.
You don't want to say that every chargeback is a purchase, do you? Because then you end up making large chunks of the regulation meaningless. Let me ask it this way. Is Mayflower authorized to underwrite insurance in any state?
No, not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
If Mayflower is not authorized to underwrite insurance, how can it possibly be selling insurance to the owner-operators?
Well, it's selling insurance coverage, Your Honor. In fact, if you look at...
Well, the alternative is that Mayflower has purchased insurance from a real insurer, and it's passing the cost of that on to the owner-operators.
Well, the ICC specifically said that insurance is within the purview, and also I think it's important to note that Mayflower was charging back well in excess of the statutory minimum. The statutory minimum is $750,000. If you look at the record in this case, specifically document 333, tab A, exhibit 4, which was filed under seal and is now not under seal, it states that Mayflower has purchased an auto liability policy from Reliance for $3 million and is charging that back to its owner-operators. Now, that's well in excess of what...
Thank you, Mr. Cohen.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.